Hi, everybody. I'm Sue Britton. Welcome to Season 4 of the FinTech Disrupticons, a podcast series by Fathom Foresight.
Hi, I'm Jean Patti. If you have listened to us before, we wanted to tell you that FGS is now called Fathom Foresight, a knowledge as a service company that provides foresight into what is happening in FinTech with your financial products, customers, competitors, and the market, and what it could mean for your business.
Our clients are companies looking to get a deeper understanding of FinTech, want to partner with FinTechs, or want to transform their products or business models.
Our guests in this series will be startups, incumbents, tech giants, investors, and people who can help us understand what changes in the financial market mean.
We hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Well, happy 2022. This is so exciting. This is our first podcast as Fathom Foresight, a new company that my co-founder Jeet and I have just launched, actually, literally, like it's actually in, you know, what, I don't know, it's jumping out of the plane and the parachute has opened or something like that. Maybe that's not the right way to put it, but it's in the cannon and the ball is out in the air. Something like that. That's what it feels like anyway. But Fathom Foresight launches today. And to mark the occasion, we have an incredible guest with a new company that came to Canada last year. And he's going to tell you all about it. But I want to welcome our guest, Dara Burke from Swoop. Hi, Dara.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Jeet. Happy New Year. And can I just say, first of all, I'm delighted and humbled to be on the first podcast under the new company. So that's a bit of a win already. So thank you for that. And I can absolutely relate to all the degrees of chaos that you guys are probably experiencing with launching something new. But underneath the calm exterior, I'm sure it's not so calm under the hood.
No, everything is working perfectly. No, it's really great to have you. And when we were getting ready for this, you mentioned something about authenticity. So I wouldn't be able to get through this if I didn't publicly apologize, because we actually recorded a podcast with Dara in 2021. And we think that this is something that probably was meant to be, but he was meant to be our first guest, because when we recorded the podcast, part of the volume crapped out. So anyhow,
stars aligned.
Exactly. The stars are aligned, and it's because, you know, maybe now the focus will be much bigger on you and your company, as people are starting to try and get to know a little bit more about what we're up to. So thank you for being such a good sport, and we really appreciate that. Yeah,
thanks, Sarah.
My pleasure, guys.
So tell us more about you and about Swoop.
Of course. So as you've mentioned, my name is Dara Burke. I'm leading the Swoop operations here in Canada. And I'll tell you a little bit about Swoop first of all. So Swoop was launched in the UK and Ireland back in 2018. And we've since grown from there. And earlier in 2021, we launched in Australia. And we've since started serving businesses in New Zealand as well. And right at the end of 2021, on November 1st, we launched in Canada, which has been a really, really exciting journey personally. And that brought me to Toronto, which has been a fantastic experience so far. I moved over here in August. When it was a balmy 35 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
Humidity.
I was thinking as soon as you said that, like this weather, and even, I mean, gee, this is what, your fourth winter in Canada?
Yes, like, it is.
This is the coldest it's been in ages. Like, I don't even know when it has been this cold. Like, you know, so this is unusual. Just please don't.
It was quite a fresh, refreshing experience.
I think I can totally relate. The first one is crazy. It hit me so hard. Sue remembers it.
Yes, I do. Oh my gosh.
It's funny,
yes.
When you're moving over though, when you're chatting to Canadians, they don't really, it's not really on the agenda. They don't really care. But when you're chatting to people who have moved here, particularly Irish people, they really talk it up. So I had this in my head as a really big thing that was coming down the tracks, and I was petrified.
Oh, so you knew.
It's actually felt fine given how much I built it up in my head, to be honest.
Good.
That's actually good.
That's great. And so what's happened since you yes. kind of kicked things off in November? I know that Jeet attended your event, your announcement event. Yeah.
We were lucky enough. I mean, when you think about all of the different uncertainty around getting people together and, you know, restrictions and everything else, we were blessed to be able to have a gathering on November 1st, which Jeet attended, which was fantastic. And we were able to launch Swoop and get some of our partners together and some of our lending partners, some of our strategic partners in a room and really just use that as a milestone to get around and get Swoop's name out there in Canada. I think in the background for a number of months, we'd been working away and developing partnerships so that we could launch our business. And just because I realize I haven't actually described the business yet. Swoop is essentially a platform which helps small and medium-sized businesses access finance across loans, grants, equity, and also helps them find savings as well for their business. So we're sort of like a one-stop shop for business finance. And really what we're trying to achieve is giving small business owners a tool so that they can very quickly find the right funding solutions for their business. So there's, in a lot of markets, in Canada included, there's such a huge volume of businesses that really go underserved by financial institutions and find it challenging to find the right funding for their business. So knowing that access to capital is such a huge issue for SMEs across the world, what we're trying to do is just provide a solution that helps to alleviate part of that. And there's a lot of factors that really compound that. Small business owners just having limited amount of time to research finance.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe not having the financial literacy. I think some of the challenges that open banking is looking to address around data silos as well as part of it. So we're really trying to design a solution with small business in mind and equally their advisors. So our solution is used by accountants, lawyers, brokers, independent wealth advisors to serve their clients using Swoop. So that they can very quickly add value to their clients and find funding for their clients that might be going through working capital challenges or maybe looking to expand their business overseas or buy a property. All kinds of scenarios come across our platform. So yeah, we were absolutely thrilled and delighted and excited to launch in Canada in Q4 2021. And the reaction's been really, really strong so far. I mean, this is our third month post-launch and our user base has really grown strong and we've been able to support a lot of businesses in really a varied way, from e-commerce businesses who might be struggling with the supply chain crisis around the world, trying to buy stock in overseas markets, getting them mm-hmm. trade finance facilities, helping developers get commercial mortgage approvals and offer letters out, lines of credit, simple working capital challenges that a lot of small businesses are going through. Also government funding as well. So, you know, the latest wave of restrictions in Ontario, British Columbia, there's grants going out the door to hospitality businesses and businesses operating in the tourism sector as well. So really Swoop has been a conduit in helping to help businesses access that funding.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And so
I was just going to comment on like the breadth of services. First of all, like, it's not just loans, it's equity and other types of fundings, including grants, and then the breadth of industries, right? Like Tara mentioned, developers, hospitality, and then whatnot, right? So it's not industry specific, which a lot of lending platforms have been in the past, like the alternatives ones. So this is really amazing. And I would also say the timing, considering the small businesses actually need this kind of a solution coming out of the pandemic. So the timing of the launch is also really perfect.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that to add to that, though, like, timing of the launch also, like this is a really hot topic right now for two other reasons.
Yeah.
One, open banking, mm-hmm. right? Which is, I think there's a lot of interest within financial institutions to, you know, try and you know, sort of improve, if not, you know, expand their offerings to small businesses, so that when open banking launches, if it does launch, it's already launched really in some ways, but that customers have the ability to, you know, choose. And to your point, like as a small business, yes, you're busy and you may not have time, but you also don't know that there's alternatives out there, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so I think, and then Swoop, there it is.
Somehow. I was waiting for that.
I was hoping it comes along.
Do I get an invoice for royalties or something?
But I think the other thing is, even though we're kind of in the next round of the pandemic, and you know, I think we all have to think about it, like there's not gonna be one day that comes where it's just done with. Like it'll just morph and we have to, you know, it'll evolve. But anyway, the Canadian businesses that took CEBA loans, what are they doing in order to deal with paying back, you know, the amount that they have to pay back in order to receive that forgiveness amount?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's 800,000 plus businesses that took the CEBA loans. And so yeah. I am sure that is going to be a giant problem for everybody. So I'd love to get your, like, build on what Jeet was talking about, but also get your take on that too.
Yeah, 100%. That, like, working capital pressure that comes with deferred taxes, deferred loans, government guaranteed debt that's now repayable is a challenge that's visible in Canada, as you said, on a big scale, but also we've seen it in Ireland, seen it in the UK, we've seen it in Australia and the other kind of markets that swoops in. And, you know, there's been extensions to some government programs more tailored specifically to sectors. So if you think about the HAS cap in Canada, now the B cap ran up before December, but a lot of businesses availed of that government guaranteed debt to alleviate some of the working capital challenges coming into the new year. And again, as I said, there's certain new grants available to affected businesses that will help, but it really doesn't go far enough. There's a huge amount of businesses out there that are now faced with, mm-hmm. You know, amounts due under CEBA and other programs. Mm-hmm. So some of those businesses have come onto Swoop looking for, you know, simple working capital facilities, which is just short-term debt to try to tie them over through the next period and make sure that they can repay what they have to repay. Others are looking for more specialized long-term solutions as well. So there's kind of a range, and it helps that we've kind of created a marketplace with all of those options available to businesses so that they can find the right solution for them.
That's great. Can you tell us who's in your marketplace or how works?
Sure. So the marketplace is quite broad. Like across all of our markets, we've got over 1,000 products. So, you know, behind all of those products are providers. So there's, you know, in the high hundreds of lenders across all jurisdictions. In Canada, we have over 35 non-bank lenders. And then we have Schedule One banks on the platform as well. So we do try to cover all ends of the market. I think a big part of our value proposition is that we try to stay with businesses through their life cycle. So whether you're a startup and you want to get a loan at a futurepreneur to get started, or the BDC, or maybe you want to get a grant or submit a Shred credit application, all of that early stage activity can be done through Swoop. Likewise, when you start to scale and grow and you need, you know, different types of facilities, you want to purchase a piece of equipment, lease an asset, all of these type of things, again, can be done through our platform, through our partners, obviously. We do have probably 40 to 50 lenders on the platform in Canada.
Wow,
fantastic.
And some of them operate both sides of the borders as well with the US. So, you know, some of our strategic partners globally, you know, do ask us to help them finance deals in the US as well. So it does, even though we're Canada specific here in kind of Swoop Canada, some of our activity does extend beyond that as well.
Right. I think I saw a post from ClearCo. They are your partners, right?
Yeah, they're one of our partners. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Clearco are partners in the UK as well, where even though we started in the UK and grew to Canada, right. They, I suppose, would have taken the inverse journey. And we see a lot of that, to be honest with you. There's a lot of lenders that are looking at jurisdictions in Australia, UK, perhaps following the open banking journey. I'm not sure, but we do have partners with lenders and non-lenders as well, strategic partners that are in those jurisdictions. And when we arrived in Canada, we had a certain amount of partnerships already intact.
Right. And then, so Swoop has been around for almost 3 years now and already live in 4 countries, which is so amazing. But when you were launching for Canada, like in Canada, were there any specific customizations needed to the platform, or is it more like just the sort of legal stuff that you need to capture in the application form and stuff?
No, there absolutely was. I think on the legal stuff, there's a certain compliance assessment that you need to do any market to see, are there any permissions that we need to operate in this market? Like, for instance, we're regulated by the FCA in the UK. We've got an Australian credit license in Australia. We're regulated under PSD2 in the EU, which is the open banking framework. And when we were looking at Canada, which is, you know, if I think back probably 18 months ago now, one of the first assessments we would have done was, okay, from a compliance standpoint, what do we need to be aware of? And is there anything we need to submit in terms of applications? Then the next piece was infrastructure and technology. So, you know, data sharing is a big one. So we build a lot of our solution in the cloud. So exchanging data between jurisdictions can be a bit of a pitfall, and you've got to be super careful. So we would have had to stand up a data or tap into an existing data center in Canada and make sure that we were collecting data for Canadian users in that data center as opposed to the UK or Australia, to make sure that we were, you know, complying with data sharing regulation. So some of those infrastructural pieces were probably the big part of the project. But a lot of our platform, to be honest with you, was easily transposed to the Canadian market. And from a user experience standpoint, we had to change certain things to make sure that they made sense to Canadian users. And
that's what exactly I was kind
of. Yeah, of course. So I think the infrastructure we were able to bring across and just make sure that the data sharing was done correctly. But the user journey obviously had to be changed, and the language that we used, the questions that we asked, we let users integrate their bank accounts. We let users integrate their cloud accounting software, their e-commerce data, if they're on Shopify or Square or any of those platforms. So we would have had to, you know, build that for the Canadian market as well.
I would just say, like, congratulations for even, like, understand the hefty piece that really goes in there.
I'll take it. Congratulations on behalf of the engineering team, which I'm sure if that's fair enough.
And do you, so we did a, we know a little bit about some of the regulations around lending in Canada, and it's, you know, obviously the, you know, OSFI is still the main regulator of the, federally regulated banks. And then you've got the credit unions and their centrals for credit unions. And, you know, there's variations on those types of regulators who do oversee, but it's given the credit unions are provincial, you've got all sorts of different, you must have had to really analyze all of those different scenarios. And then the alternative lenders, like one of the things that I think, you know, folks have been concerned about is the lack of regulation of the private lenders or the alternative lenders. And, you know, I have a point of view on that, but I don't, and I'd be interested in yours. But one of the things is around, you know, do you report to FinTrack or not, right? And we've had some conversations with some of the bigger alternative lenders who'd be more than happy to. And effectively already, you know, whether they report to FinTrack or are regulated prudentially or have a prudential regulator that's overseeing them, do many of the things that, you know, and I argue, and this is unfair to say because it's probably a generalization, but I would argue that a lot of those, you know, alternative lenders, certainly the newer ones, probably have better technology to actually do the work that you have to do if you're, you know, if OSFI is going to come in and, you know, like check that you've got all of the checks and balances in place. Like most of those companies, it's all automated or digital. So having said all of that, what kinds of things did you need to do for Canada?
Yeah, so I suppose on that, we don't lend money and we don't hold client assets, which means our business model is a little bit different to some of those lenders you mentioned. But I do absolutely agree with you that some of the newer age lenders are set up in a way that, you know, does make them easy to, you know, it makes their operating model very easy to comply with regulation, makes them very auditable. And we certainly have lending partners here in Canada that are regulated in other jurisdictions, but not in Canada. And their business models are likely to be very, very similar. And I'm sure that they would be, you know, perfectly fine with being regulated in Canada under a similar kind of framework.
Yeah.
Us ourselves, we're regulated as a credit broker by the FCA. So there's quite a stringent amount of compliance work and policies and internal procedures that we would have had to put in place for that. And with that in mind, you know, we certainly wouldn't have any issue with being regulated in Canada because our business processes are identical to that of the UK.
Well, and it's not like you would stop doing stuff just because you're operating in a different country.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds funny to say, but interesting.
But yeah, to answer your question, one of the first exercises we would have done was an assessment of our business model in the context of Canada and to see were there any activities that we would be doing that might be kind of under the scope of any regulation. And we would have obviously got the help of some subject matter experts to carry out that analysis. But that was one of the first things we did in the project, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The alternative lenders are, I think, their share of the market is growing in Canada. We don't have anyone that really tracks it in a credible way. I did see some when we were doing some research last year. It looked like there might have been some studies that were underway either with, you know, the government or otherwise. So maybe they're out now. But the last time I checked, it was clear that Shopify was making a dent from a working capital perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone really looks at Clearco as an alternative lender, but obviously they're in the mix too. And then, you know, Square isn't necessarily lending, but certainly has some financial products out there now in the Canadian market. But I think it used to be that the banks and credit unions had about 70% of the market. And then the alternative lenders or mom and dad or, you know, something like, you know, whatever, VCs and all that kind of stuff rounded up the balance of the 30%. But I think that's changing. I think that's probably the 70% is shrinking. And it's not even really a good representation of, you know, of the market and how it, the market share, because I don't necessarily think that, you know, businesses are all in the right products when they get offered something by a financial institution.
Yeah, exactly. I think right? an interesting one to look at is that 70%. Does that actually reflect 70% of the market, or does it reflect the population of businesses that actually applied for debt and were successful? So how many businesses went without debt, or how many businesses were maybe not served by their bank and then on that basis chose not to find finance? And that's interesting. So you mentioned Shopify, for example. So Shopify provides essentially cash advances to their merchants within a certain criteria, of course. Maybe some of those merchants either didn't exist or wouldn't have been approved for finance by their banks. So they wouldn't have even been counted in that 70%. So perhaps the overall market's growing. And certainly there's been a lot of evidence that in the UK, where when businesses were rejected for finance by their bank, their main high street bank, that they then chose not to seek finance elsewhere, which is certainly something that we've seen evidence of. And maybe that alternative financing market is growing to make it easier to address and to serve those businesses.
I that's a great point. That's a great point. Because also too, like, you know, this is our second, well, my second startup, new company, Jeets first, but you know, the bank is happy to give us a credit card. Right. I mean, yeah, they're like, if we asked for a line of credit or a loan, I suspect we would likely not get one. I did that, you know, 7 years ago or whatever with FGS and certainly didn't get one. And so, yeah, your growth can be limited by, you know, what money you have in your bank account or what, you know, invoices you have coming in.
Exactly,
that you can,
right. And the credit model for some of the banks in Canada and other markets too can be very risk adverse. So certainly in Canada, there's over a million companies that are turning over less than $10 million. That's employing 70% of the economy, the workforce. And those companies find it challenging. There's no doubt that those companies find it challenging to get bank debt. So what other options are available to those companies, which make up such a huge portion of the economy? Mm-hmm. I suppose outside of the banks, you know, maybe it's government funding programs, government guaranteed debt, you know, but also, you know, non-bank lending as well.
And it's also, sorry, Sue,
just final point, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Finding the right product. So you mentioned credit card. Like, clearly, I suspect a credit card is not going to be the product that you're going to launch your business on. But you know, a lot of small businesses are having to make do with products that are just not the right fit because they either haven't found them or they don't have visibility over them or the lenders aren't visible to them. But there's products out there that, you know, allow businesses to take the next step and grow on the right, and, you know, with the right product, that's the right fit.
Yeah. We've had I don't even know how many conversations with incumbents or with, you know, big companies who talk about things like the, you know, the reputational risk or brand risk of work of either offering high interest loans, which is what the alternative lending space has been perceived to be, right? Like, sure, you can go get a loan from, you know, somebody that's not a bank or a credit union, but you're going to pay 20-30% or even more interest, which is not true because there are some, you know, alternative lenders that are, you know, sort of near prime. But what I find kind of ironic about this is like how many businesses are using credit cards that are offered by the banks that are at 20-30% interest.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not a brand risk or a reputational risk. It's like, anyway. But you know what? It at the end of the day, it's not an anti-bank statement. It's the reality is they have regulations that they have to adhere to, and it's OSFI who dictates those credit risk principles anyway to the banks.
Of course. And some people might perfectly fine make the case that the Canadian banking, you know, system has been pretty robust and resilient during a lot of turbulence when other banking systems haven't been so robust and resilient. So I'm not necessarily firing shots at the bank for the sake of it, but
for sure.
I would make the case that there are, you know, an enormous amount of businesses out there in Canada that probably could do with debt and are perfectly strong and performing businesses, but might just find it challenging for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, absolutely.
That's where, I was going to say, I think that's where kind of the alternative data sources and open banking comes to play, right? When banks sort of start taking those elements into the risk model and start evaluating businesses in a different way, then it's probably not as like a business which is perceived risky because of their certain standard traditional bank statements or cash flow wouldn't be as risky, right? If they're taking probably their data from Amazon or data from their Shopify account. So, I think I do want to touch a little bit on open banking plans for school.
Can I just, for sure. Can I just say something about that? Because I think you just raised a really, really amazing point because, you know, accounting systems and, you know, merchant systems have such an amazing amount of data in them, right? Yeah. And so the ability for those who are on either one of those, which I don't know how many businesses that would cover, because a lot of people wouldn't use an accounting system and not everybody's a retailer that needs a merchant POS, but let's say, you know, it covers a good chunk of them. The data in that and the fact that the regulations, you know, don't, you know, sort of obviously go past, you know, being a financial, if you're a financial institution, you're regulated, but if you're not, you're not.
Yeah.
Like those are great, you know, potential areas to, for those organizations to start lending to their customers, right?
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And I mean, at the end of the day, like what we all probably want is just to see businesses properly supported. Whether the banks can do it or not is probably for them to take up with OSFI. but at the end of the day, like I think, you know, Shopify is really demonstrating that there's a market, you know, like they were 10% of the volume based on this BDC research that was published in, you know, a particular quarter in 2021. So like there's a market for it.
Yeah. Right? And what the banking sector might describe as alternative data sources, or to me and you as e-commerce data, banking data, or you know, accounting data, any other type of attributes that are building a profile on a business. Like Shopify, you've mentioned Square, Amazon, you know, QuickBooks, Xero. These are all companies that are advancing lines of credit essentially to their users. They're not banks, but they're now playing in the lending space, and they're using different data points to make that decision. And I think what's also interesting about it is the role it can play in kind of breaking down systematic bias and prejudice that might exist in the lending space. Certainly, I think most people would agree that there's, you know, rife inequality when it comes to allocation of capital. And if data and sort of, you know, platforms and marketplaces can play a role in breaking that down, then great. And you know, the decision that you're using, it's less human and more data driven than maybe the kind of the kind of attributes that are filled with bias will become less relevant when it comes to the credit decision making.
Oh, I'd love to talk more about all of that, but I think Jeet's point about open banking is very relevant, and our listeners will definitely want to unpack that. So so Jeet, back to you.
Now, I was going to say, because I guess, Dara, I remember from one of our previous conversations, you did tell me that businesses can connect some of these alternative sources, data points to Swoop, and you are sort of enabling certain amount of alternative credit scoring. But I think it was just the beginning of it. So I want to know, I think I want to dig deep into it. And also, like, I'm sure with open banking coming in Canada, you might be building this whole chunk of new solutions for the lenders in the industry, as I'm sure a lot of banks and credit unions are at this point looking for such solutions. So yeah, tell us about your plans.
Yeah, I think one thing to mention from the outset, as I think Sue mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, open banking, you know, it's a bit of, you know, it's already underway, and there's different formats and types of open banking here in Canada that's already going on. And fundamentally, all we're talking about is people having ownership of their data and using extracting value from their own data and making sure that there's, you know, less friction and people can kind of move it around and trust third parties to use their data correctly and bring them more products and better value. That's really what we're talking about. And open banking can be interchangeably used with consumer directed finance and open finance as well. And there's other jurisdictions that are, you know, going outside of banking. So whilst banking might be the focus of the open banking framework here in Canada that's coming down the tracks, very soon we'll be talking about energies and utilities, we're talking about telco, we're talking about any, you know, all different types of services, insurance, etc. And you can see other jurisdictions mapping out their frameworks like that. You can see it in Brazil, see it in Australia, you know, Hong Kong, Singapore have taken a very different approach, non-regulatory driven at the moment. But it's just going to get bigger and bigger. But at its very core is just the idea that you own your data and you can, you know, instruct institutions to release your data and you can use it as you please. So from our perspective, we allow users to integrate their data sources into Swoop. And, you know, we're regulated as an aggregator or an AISP in the EU and the UK, so that there's standards that we have to conform to, of course. But, you know, here in Canada, there is a certain amount of activity already going on. It's just about getting the framework in place that really holds the banks and other organizations to account in terms of standards and APIs. I mean, it's going to be super interesting over the next 12 months to see what we end up with in terms of a phase one open banking rollout in Canada. It really is just the start of a journey. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the UK, Australia, even though they're a little bit ahead of Canada, they're still very much in the early stages, and adoption was slow initially, but they are really bearing the fruit of it as well.
And the so for people that are listening, AISP is Account Information Service Provider. And I'm sure we will get those acronyms being used in Canada, but right now that would be you know, what we would call our data aggregators, like the Flinks and Plaid and MXs of the world in Canada. Let's pretend that I am a credit union or a bank. Let's just pretend for a sec that I'm a smaller bank, because I think the big banks probably have, you know, scads of people who are figuring this out. But smaller bank or credit union who sees open banking as this opportunity to grow their business, grow revenue, grow their customer base. How can you help them with that?
Well, I think the first thing when they're talking about growing their user base, open banking and the kind of open exchange of data fundamentally allows them access to more data, more insights onto customers, you know, what sort of products they are looking for, how to make customer experience better. It allows them to open up partnerships through APIs very easily. So, you know, when you're in your on online banking application, you might have products that are visible to you from other organizations that are essentially integrated in there. So that's an example of, you know, APIs bringing, organizations bringing new products in via APIs. And that sort of activity, you know, hopefully presents a huge opportunity for credit unions or other smaller FIs to compete on a bigger scale, offer a wider range of products and services to their users, and also access to a bigger data pool as well, and really get to know their customers and their users on another level. Mm-hmm.
So can they integrate Swoop into their online banking so that a customer of theirs who, I don't know, I might not be presenting the right user journey or whatever, but, you know, let's say it's me and Jeet and I have launched Fathom Foresight and we actually want a line of credit or maybe a working capital loan. But the bank, let's pretend that it's not a big bank, even though it is a big bank, but anyway, let's pretend that it's not, won't give us one. Is there something that you can do then to plug in, you know, during that experience and say, but Swoop, here it is.
and that is exactly what you'll hear when you click the button.
There it is.
Yeah, that's absolutely. This is not futuristic, like this is happening. So we have APIs which we can externalize, and that allows us to basically embed Swoop in other applications. So whether it's an accounting software, whether it's another lender, whether it's another marketplace, we have in Australia and the UK actually built links or built integrations into other applications, so that users of that application can see Swoop's offering, and, you know, in the use case that you described, if they needed a line of credit, they could access it through the platform or through our marketplace. And ultimately it would be delivered through one of our partners. So within our marketplace in the UK, for example, we have a number of our lending partners who actually have lending APIs into Swoop. And once a certain amount of criteria is met, data is exchanged by a user. They can go ahead and access finance, and it removes the amount of kind of human involvement in the credit decision-making process. Typically this happens below a certain threshold for the moment, but the application is quite wide and it's relevant for a lot of products.
Even if you're not, well, and as we were previously saying, even if you're not a, like, let's say you're a, you know, I don't know, a big contractor who has big clients who need to finance big purchases, they could, instead of them having to, you know, lend the money themselves, they could, you know, plug in Swoop and give you the ability to access their customer base. I mean, contractors is one of the hugest, you know, small business segments in the Canadian market. But have I got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we've got a kind of a range of different ways that we've used the platform. Obviously, our core offering, which is helping businesses who sign up for our platform, but with partners, like we have white label products, we have APIs that we've externalized and embedded in applications. And again, sometimes partners just want a specific number of partners. So, you know, NatWest, for example, in the UK, just wanted to bring grants and equity to their business bank customers because obviously they bring lending products themselves. So it wouldn't make sense for them to offer competing products on their platform. So, you know, we partner with them to give them a white label version of Swoop where they were just bringing grants and equity products to their business banking customers.
That's actually open banking like use case right and play there and how it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah. So obviously, yeah, the UK is an interesting open banking journey in that it started off with 9 of the biggest banks, the CMA9 it's called, and they were mandated to conform to the open banking standards and open up the customer account information through APIs. You know, it wasn't a, for sure it was a bumpy road. I mean, I think 6 of the banks needed an extension on the delivery date. I think 4 of them missed the second deadline actually.
Right.
Even today, you know, it doesn't work seamlessly every single time. Sometimes the APIs are down, etc. So I think sometimes in Canada, when I hear people talking about open banking, they think that the UK or the EU is so far ahead, but really they've of course led the way in some respects, but Canada has a fantastic opportunity now to actually draw up legislation that would put them right up there, if not ahead of a lot of markets in Europe. So it's a use case of open banking, and obviously we've been able to integrate with all of the CMA9 banks in the UK.
That's amazing. So can you share what your business model is? Is it like a rev share with the lender, and or how does that work?
Yeah, of course. So typically you're right, it is a rev share. We don't charge users of Swoop any fees or any user fees for the platform.
So like the small business doesn't have to pay you.
No, that's correct. Yeah. So typically the way that we would get paid, the way that we generate revenue is through commission that we generate from lenders and from funders after successful transactions. Through our white label and our sort of tech offering, we do sometimes generate revenue from partners where we build them solutions. But I think our core revenue is similar to that of a broker, just on a different style of format because we're a platform.
Wow, so good. Like it sounds so silly, but I just, you know, there's been like, we've got rate shopping or in both insurance and credit card and other things, but we've never really had something like this for small businesses. When I say we've got rate shopping, like companies in Canada that have been in that space. And I don't know what it is, but like, I don't know why that is, but it seems to me that this is, you know, just such a much needed, you know, friction point to solve that. I imagine, you know, 12 months from now, you know, we're going to be talking about how you guys are just
like, hopefully
uber successful. I mean, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, the reaction's been really good so far. And I think, you know, that sentiment's been echoed by a lot of the businesses and also a lot of the advisors that we speak to who are accountants and they've got a lot of small business clients who are just struggling to get finance to grow. So, yeah, for sure, it's access to capital is a big challenge for a lot of SMEs, not just here in Canada. Hopefully we can do a little bit to help that.
And it just made me wonder too, like, are any of the alternative lenders kind of annoyed that you're here? Like, do they feel that you are taking some of the, I mean, we know that the alternative lenders have a huge challenge making money because the cost of capital is so high for them. Which is another disadvantage that often gets the banks painted with a, you know, with a negative view because, you know, they like they take deposits in order to fund, you know, and be able to have capital to lend, but they typically only lend to one out of every five customers. So, and I think that's across the board. I don't think that's specific to small businesses, but so, you know, their cost of capital is so low, whereas all lenders have to buy capital.
Yeah.
And so they have, they, and so their margins are so skinny. And do they say, well, we don't need your help? Or is it that you're offering them this opportunity to get access to such a, you know, a vast customer base that they haven't been able to penetrate?
Yeah, to be honest, I can't say we've experienced any negativity or animosity from the alternative lenders in Canada, which is good so far.
I think awesome.
One perspective is that a lot of these businesses are spending money on marketing anyway. So using a broker channel or an intermediary channel may actually be more cost efficient depending on what type of marketing they do, I suppose. Some of them, again, are trying to be more digital as well. And I suppose Swoop presents them with an opportunity to perhaps integrate as well further down the line, if that's something that's on their roadmap. Some of them are more old school and just want to receive a lead and, you know, packaged up for them and they can do an assessment themselves. But certainly there are a few lenders in Canada in the alternative space that are trying to build digital solutions. And I think part of that would involve marketplaces.
I think, first of all, thanks for coming to the podcast. And usually we do this at the end, which I think I know a couple of things that you might be needing because Swoop is growing in Canada. But what's your ask from the audience? And when I say audience, we have a whole bunch of fintech enthusiasts. We have financial institutions and we have a lot of regulators in our audience as well. So I would say take the stage and go for your ask.
Yeah, I think firstly, the first thing that comes to mind is that we're obviously growing our team. And so if you're someone who is interested in working at, you know, a fintech, a marketplace, an open banking platform, you know, come reach out to us for a conversation. If you work in partnerships, if you work in sales, come talk to us. I think we've started to grow our team here in Toronto, which has been great, but certainly open to hiring roles across Canada to serve our user base right across Canada and North America broadly as well. So I think that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is around partnerships as well. So if you're a lender, if you're an advisor, if you're an accountant, if you're a wealth advisor, if you've got clients who are having challenges accessing capital, you know, come reach out to Swoop Funding. We'd love to have a chat about partnering.
Well, thanks for coming and
And thank you so much for having me, guys. And congratulations again on the new launch. I'm really excited for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. All right, have a good rest of your week.
Yeah, take care, guys.
We're so glad you joined us for today's podcast. Hopefully, we helped you fathom the future a little bit.
If you want to hear more, please check out our website. Hope you join us on our next episode. Stay tuned.